water going that way. So I angled a bit to the right as I hit the road and broke into a sprint on the solid pavement. I could hear the thing slithering along behind me. A wet schlup, schlup, schlup. Then there was a pop, followed by a fizz, and a squeal from the seaweed monster. "Pop, pop, fizz, fizz," I sang, turning around to face the thing. Oh, what a relief it is. The satchel charge was a mixture of a white phosphorus grenade for trigger, a couple of pounds of thermite, and some plastic film cans filled with jellied kerosene for longer-lasting burning. Milo had made it. The monster was very wet and thus didn't burn very well, but the nasty charge was so hot, it just kind of melted right through its body and burned a hole in the asphalt, sticking the whole thing in place. It wasn't going anywhere. Just flopping spastically, curling up around the fire and sort of banshee wailing in a weird, high, piping tone.
"Want me to bring over the flamethrower?"
Sam yelled. "Nah," I said, as the thing finally settled down and was good seaweed. "Think that's got it." To answer the professional question, Muljawank. Although it was one of a half dozen creatures with the same name, Fuckin was 57,862-4 in this case. Puff, 20 grand. To answer the obvious question, the young lady was so excited to meet a top-secret Navy SEAL who was also a member of Hoodoo Squad that she quickly forgot her masticated boyfriend. We nearly had a little war over that. Hitting on girls at incidents was my standard way of finding dates. I didn't need some redneck pinniped sticking his ball bouncing nose in where it didn't belong. On the other hand, we had a lot of incidents and a lot of girls to chat up. Honestly, picking up girls in New Orleans was sort of like clubbing baby seals. When we had time. "I understand that we need to get this under control," Agent Robinson told us. "But we also need you to be discreet. Do you even understand the meaning of the word?" This time, Decay and I had been dispatched to cover a shambler outbreak in Metairie Cemetery. Problem being, the outbreak was daytime. Metairie was right off I-10, which was ground level at that point, and since it was the middle of the day, the interstate would be busy. Fortunately, as far as we knew at that time, the outbreak was on the back side of the cemetery and away from the interstate, and Metairie had fences, so they shouldn't get out. "We'd do the best we can, considering we're going to be shooting zombies in broad daylight in a very large cemetery. I promised discretion to the point of not using a rocket launcher, because it's generally pointless with shamblers. Do we have a positive location of the outbreak?"
"According to the caretaker, it's over by Iris Avenue."
Lieutenant Hale was another promoted sergeant in SIU. The good part about working SIU was the promotions tended to be fast. The bad part was that it was like getting promoted in World War II, because you were stepping into a dead man's shoes. "Perimeter shut down?"
"Sort of," Hale said.
"Define sort of." Hale frowned.
"Ask the G-Man."
"The outbreak is in a remote part of the cemetery," Robinson declared. "I saw no reason to surround the place with police cars. That just causes more people to notice."
"Agent, in this town, you try for subtle, it's gonna bite you in the ass. So I'd suggest you put cars on every entrance, put them along the fences, and have some on patrol." "Clearly you don't understand the meaning of discreet. Let me do my job, and you do yours, Hunter." "I was trying to help," I said, opening up Honey Bear's door.
"Where are you going?"
Robinson demanded. The MCB agent was really confusing poor DK.
"Into the cemetery?"
"In a car? What part of discreet was unclear?"
"You keep using that word," Decay said, climbing into the passenger seat. I do not think it means what you think it means.
We're sure as hell not going to walk all over that fucker. It's huge. And in the car, we can break contact, among other things. And, you know, not get bit. Also, from the point of view of any witnesses, it's a lot better to have a car driving in a cemetery, normal, than having two guys rigged up like commandos walking all over it, abby-normal. So let us do our job, and you go do yours, agent.
Finding all of these again is going to take all day, Decay said as he shot another shambler in the head. We were right by the Confederate Monument Circle, out of the car and dealing with a couple zombies that seemed to be headed in the general direction of Pontchartrain Expressway. Not our problem, as long as we get tissue samples. That asshole Robinson can worry about it.
Yeah, yeah, Decay said, walking over to cut off the right ears. I looked over my shoulder as I heard the blurt of a siren. Hail was driving up, sort of fast for a cemetery, and had hit it to get my attention. Hale pulled up next to me.
We got real problems now.
Which are?
Some shamblers got out the main gate.
That's right off the Pontchartrain off-ramp.
I blanched.
Don't tell me.
Trucker just jackknifed when he hit a zombie on the interstate. There's more wandering around the pileup. Traffic's backing up to Metairie. And only one side's backed up, so all them tourists is driving right by a bunch of undead wandering around I-10.
There's a time for discreet, and a time to shut this the fuck down. The tractor trailer was parked across two lanes, shutting down traffic all by its lonesome. Problem being, the trucker had gotten out to check on the person he'd hit and been swarmed. Zombies aren't precise. Unless they are being directed by a necromancer, they just do their thing. They search for the living to feed on. They're mostly attracted by sound and anything that indicates a living human presence. Like tourists honking horns at the people who had wandered onto the interstate. You can't always get a good look from a car, and while the people in front, who had come screeching to a stop to avoid the truck wreck, could see there was something seriously weird going on, all the other assholes behind them were honking their horns. Some of the zombies were heading up between the stopped cars towards the honking. Others were trying to break into the cars. People were trying to drive through them and panicking. Just as we arrived, a station wagon filled with a family plowed into the tractor trailer. Most of I-10 was either elevated or lined by a low concrete wall. Opposite the east entrance to Metairie Cemetery, there was an off-ramp from I-10 to Pontchartrain Boulevard. It was this off-ramp the zombies had used to get onto the interstate. Another was down on the off-ramp having been hit by a car, which, probably driven by a local, had then sped off. Then a following car had stopped to help the injured person in the road, and that driver, female, had also been attacked. So that car was blocking the off-ramp. Not to mention the zombies still feasting on her warm corpse. I rolled Honey Bear up to the stopped car.
You got plenty of rounds? I asked.
Load it up,
Decay said. Let's do this.
I rolled out of my door, hefted my Uzi, and went to work. I hit the head of the driver as we passed. I held my hand up to a car that was rolling forward, covered in zombies who were trying to get to the passengers inside. Again, another tourist family. I made eye contact with the male driver and just held up my hand like a traffic cop for him to stop. Then I pointed at his kids and put my left hand over my eyes. He and his wife got the message and turned around to cover their kids' eyes. Then we shot every zombie off that car in a couple of seconds, single taps to the head.
Hey, I yelled through the rolled up window. I know you want to get your family to safety, but I need you to stay right here blocking traffic. You'll be okay.
You're nuts,
the guy screamed.
They're eating people. Just stay here.
I hoped he'd listen. We needed traffic stopped.
Decay had trotted over to the group around the wrecked station wagon. One had gotten through the cracked front window and to at least one of the parents in the front seat. He was clearing the ones around the car when I yanked open the back door and climbed in. "Hi, folks," I said, leaning over the front seat and shooting the female zombie in the head. The dad, driver again, was still alive. She'd been ripping at his carotid artery, and he didn't have much time left. The wife and mother, presumably, had climbed into the back seat to escape the undead, and the kids had pushed even further back, up into the piled luggage in the cargo area. "Medical is on the way," I said, pulling out a bandage and putting it on the man's neck. "I need you to apply pressure to this, ma'am. Now don't go anywhere and just stay in the car. You're going to be okay. We've got this." To make sure they didn't leave, I took out the keys, then shot two of their tires. It sounds cruel, but I'd already seen the bite mark on the mom's arm. She needed to not leave town. And the kids were shortly going to be orphans. It took a few minutes to clear the scene of Walking Dead. When we were done, the interstate was littered with bodies and still jammed up, which was how it was going to have to stay until MCB had the bodies cleared and the scene under control, including rounding up all the witnesses and bitten. I didn't like their job, but I agreed with it. Pity the converse wasn't true. I'd leave it to the feds to shoot the bitten in the head. There was probably more than one mother and father. That was what MCB was for. Hopefully Robinson would have the decency to do it at the hospital and away from the kids. As we walked away from the scene, I heard the bark of a 10mm. I didn't even look. I could tell by the screams and the direction it had come from the station wagon. So much for decency. There had not been another Kifo eruption for weeks. I tried using the rune of Onesh I had picked up in Britain, hoping it would point me toward evil, sort of like Madame Courtney's crystal charm. Only it did not work as advertised. It spent most of the time hanging from Honey Bear's mirror, doing basically nothing. Until one day I was driving back from a call out with Decay, and he noticed the rune had started to pull unnaturally, almost like it was magnetized. Since it hadn't worked at all so far, there had to be a Kifo worm really near. The area was pretty standard New Orleans neighborhood. Narrow houses that went back much further than you'd expect. Some of them were barely 10 feet wide and half a block deep. Some were brightly painted, others plain. All had bars on their windows. Fairly well kept up. Working class, rather than ghetto. 424 South Clark was a duplex. Narrow, story and a half, white. There was a garage, apparently, on the bottom floor with living quarters on the top. The garage and upper were split. "Cover story?" Decay asked as we got out. "Depends on if they're locals or not." I was trying to play the new MCB's game as much as possible, but if they recognized us as Hoodoo Squad, I'd just run that gambit. The woman who answered the door was Hispanic, in her 30s, and had apparently been sleeping from the look of it. We had to knock quite a long time to get her up.
"Nobody."
She had a thick accent. There was an inner door and an outer barred and screened door. She'd opened the inner, but clearly wasn't opening the outer.
"Go away."
"Madam, we're checking out a report of some trapped methane gas in the area," I said in Spanish. "We just need to do some tests in your garage."
"What kind of tests?"
she asked suspiciously. "Methane gas is naturally produced by decay. It can build up in enclosed lower areas and lead to spontaneous fires and even explosions."
"Who are you with?"
she asked. "The EPA," I said. Decay was wearing his usual cargo pants and boots, and the scalp lock and piercings were sort of obvious.
"You don't look like EPA."
"We're contractors, ma'am."
"I'm calling the police."
She started closing the door.
"Good.
Ask for the Sheriff's Special Investigations Unit. I pulled out an MHI card. Tell them I had this. They can explain everything. She looked at the card and blanched.
This is magic stuff.
The way things are working these days, I can neither confirm nor deny. But we have readings on something either in your house or your neighbor's.
I let you in the downstairs,
she said, still suspicious.
But not upstairs.
That's fine. When she let us in, I saw there was an Astra 25 dangling in her hand.
You try anything, I shoot you.
I think she's immune to your charms, Chad, Decay said, grinning. How long have you lived in New Orleans? And have you ever encountered anything weird? Weirder than normal, that is.
Yes, I work at the hospital. Nurse's aide. I know about the magic. This town is cursed.
Then there was no use lying. Get out the room, Decay. Decay pulled it out and followed the swing towards the back of the garage. Behind the single-car garage was a section of rooms and hallways. Most of it was filled with various build-up of residents. Papers, toys, old bicycles. Whoever owned the rental clearly had never moved anything out that was left behind, just moved it to the ground floor. We followed the swinging amulet back into a cluttered room and found one of the fungal symbols under a pile of old newspapers. Oh, shit, Decay muttered. Don't touch it. We need to back out of here fast. It was the largest one I'd seen. I was pretty sure the only reason it had never triggered was the area was deserted and the residents stuck to the upper floor. One kid down here playing around, and there'd have been another Kifo outbreak. When we were back in the sunlight, I took a deep breath. Ma'am, get everyone out of the house. Is there anyone next door this time of day?
No, and I'm the only one home.
We need to evacuate the neighborhood. Don't go back in that house. Not for anything. You sure it's a Kifo? Agent Robinson asked. There hasn't been an emergence here. Same symbol, I replied. After I'd alerted Franklin and the team, we had done as directed and brought in the MCB. Campbell had dispatched Robinson, whose career was more or less at nadir after having overseen a Class 1 event which turned into a Class 4. I wasn't privy to the internal discussions, but I was pretty sure that letting a handful of slow zombies out of a fenced-in cemetery to close down a busy freeway wasn't well regarded in MCB circles. As the first agent on scene, Robinson was being even more twitchy and hypersensitive than usual. And you used a rune of Onesh? A likely story. MCB has tried that. The rune doesn't work in New Orleans. All it does is swing around in circles. My theory is if there's a Mava beneath the city, it's putting out jamming signals like mad. But at the same time, all the effects, including Kifo worms, are putting out other jamming signals. The reason the rune swings in every direction is there's stuff all over the damn place, so you need to get close. We drove right past it, and that symbol is by far the biggest one we've seen. Probably the only reason we picked it up. I can't afford any more debacles. Before I allow any actions, I need to see this so-called symbol with my own eyes first, Agent Robinson insisted. Okay, I said, but be careful as hell. Don't touch it. I know what I'm doing, Gardenier. You're a witness, I said, pointing at Lieutenant Bichard from SIU. The sounds from the interior of the house had finally died down. I told him to be careful. This worm is a zit ready to pop, Special Agent, I told Campbell. I warned Agent Robinson to be careful with it. Robinson had never exited the house. I was present, sir, Lieutenant Bichard agreed. Agent Robinson was dismissive of Mr. Gardenier's warning. When the rest of the MCB had shown up, Campbell had ordered the police to evacuate the entire neighborhood. They'd gone with a buildup of methane gas again. Freaking methane gas. It was everywhere. Damn it, Robinson. Campbell was looking a little ragged. The news was reporting that all the deaths related to the cemetery breakout had been caused by a multi-car pileup. But the local MCB must have been scrambling to track down and intimidate into silence any passerby who had seen the undead, or our clearance thereof. And now it looked like his right-hand man had just gotten eaten by a Kifo worm.
He should have known better. You should have known better!
How was I supposed to stop him?
You guys don't listen to me.
Why would we?
Even though our director is too stupid to see it.
I still think you're corrupt and covering for a cult. Luckily for Special Agent Campbell, that was when Franklin walked up and interrupted us.
I'm sorry for your loss. I think what's been going on with it is it's been growing for a long time without any actual food input. It's been down there in that basement waiting for someone to come along.
Sadly, that was your man. Campbell was seething and searching for someone to blame.
Have you looked at this thing?
Campbell asked Lieutenant Bouchard.
Special Agent, he spit out some dip. You can shoot me in the head if you want, but I ain't going in that fucking house.
Not after what I heard.
I'm not even real comfortable about bringing in the bomb pig. I'd guess that the bigger the symbol, the bigger the worm. And that was one damn big symbol.
I hate this town, Campbell said.
Embrace the suck, I said. Are you gonna let us do our jobs or not?
Just get rid of this thing,
Campbell said.
And see if you can recover Agent Robinson's body.
Franklin and I exchanged a glance. We both knew that Robinson was being digested in the belly of a Mava Panave, but we decided not to push things. We'll check.
If this thing comes out, don't fucking hesitate with the napalm.
My words muffled by the visor of the silver suit. We had never used a decoy bomb pig on this fresh of an eruption. The worm could still be right beneath the surface. The plan was to get the pig in position with cover from two flamethrowers. Decay was on one, and Sam Haven on the other. John Glenn and I would drag the pig.
Got it, Sam said. Looking forward to burning your ass.
The good news is we have an eruption point. We'll set the pig down near that and then get the fuck out.
I've done this before.
Glenn had helped Milo with the heavy lifting for a few of those.
Let's just do it.
We found the hole right near where we'd found the symbol. Before, it had been a little section of hallway and two small storage closets. Both of the closets were gone now. The walls were in splinters, and the built-up crap that had been stuffed in them was scattered everywhere. The worm had even broken out the walls between the two sides of the duplex. The other side was just as trashed.
Let's just stop right here, I said to Glenn, as we reached the destroyed area.
It should be close enough. We still had to set the wires and prep it. The detonators and safeties were on the outside of the pig up under its belly. The wires were coiled by them and held on with tape, ready to be set. I grabbed one as Glenn grabbed another and stretched them out. As we were doing that, there was a rumble from under the ground, and in a flash, the Kifo worm was just there. I didn't hesitate. I pulled the safety on the fuse, turned, and yelled, "Run!" I was still holding the wire in my hand. As I bolted, it triggered the fuse. Glenn, unfortunately, had looked at the worm. I don't know if he'd never looked at one before when they were killing them, or if it was the incredible size of the thing. He'd fought hoodoo on his own for years, but it had been normal stuff. Zombies, weak vampires, a werewolf. The sort of shit you see in movies. He'd done it right. He'd done it smart. He'd never seen anything like the Kifo worm. And unfortunately, he reacted like most people do the first time they see anything supernatural. He froze. Pro tip. There is a time to save your buddy and a time to save yourself. Knowing the difference between the two is important, and accepting that sometimes you leave people behind is also important.
I'm not justifying letting Glenn die there. I'm explaining. John Glenn outmassed me by about 150 pounds. I could not pick him up and carry him out with any sort of speed. If I'd even hesitated long enough to grab his arm and pull him, the worm would have gotten us both. I repeat, there's a time to be a hero and a time to run like hell. If you don't learn that, you won't last long in this business. As it was, the only reason the worm didn't catch me was Sam Haven. He didn't hesitate either. He filled the hall with fire. The worm scooped up the frozen Glen and our offering and disappeared back into its hole to avoid the napalm.
Shit,
I said, running through a house which was now thoroughly on fire.
Shit, shit, shit.
Wasn't anything you could do, man,
Haven said, patting at the flames.
I know that.
We were leaving behind little droplets of napalm and getting the house even more thoroughly involved. But I still have to live with it.
Honest to God, we were trying for discreet, I said, holding up my badly burned glove in a scout salute.
I only count three of you, Campbell said.
Thing erupted while we were setting the trap.
Glenn froze. Sorry, but we didn't see any sign of your agents. About then, there was another serious rumble from underground, and the burning house more or less exploded. The Kifo worm was massive. It reared up through the roof, hissing and whistling in agony. They'd brought up a fire truck and were rigging hoses to get the house fire under control. At the sight of the Kifo worm, most of the firefighters froze in horror. The smarter of them ran like hell. Despite being covered in napalm, out in sunlight, and with 100 pounds of thermite burning in its gut, the Kifo worm was only mortally wounded. And seriously pissed, it grabbed one of the frozen firefighters with a pseudopod and pulled him into its mass, absorbing the body in a flash. Sam and Decay weren't exactly slow, though. They ran forward and started covering it in napalm, driving it back onto the burning house. There was exactly nothing the rest of us could do. I just watched the thing being consumed by the flames. The smoke was still pouring out of the hole as it crumbled to ash. The Kifo was dead, but both of the flanking homes were now seriously on fire, and all the firefighters were gone.
"Well, boys, looks like it's up to us to put out the fire,"
Franklin shouted as he headed for the fire truck. It wasn't our job, but our team leader wasn't the type to just stand around while people's houses burned down.
"Anybody know how to run one of these things?"
When I looked around, Special Agent Campbell had fled. Embrace the suck. Chapter 12. So now we get to one of the most important episodes in my life as a hunter. The reason I sued MCB and won. It was a rainy Tuesday. Calls had been slow. There hadn't been a Kifo eruption in the week since we lost Glenn. So we were hanging around the team shack when, lo and behold, two of my favorite people in the world showed up. Myers and Franks. I'd been helping Franklin with paperwork when I got called back to the team room. "Agent Myers," I said, nodding and greeting. Being former MHI, the junior agent wasn't very popular around here. Traitor was one of the nicer things my co-workers called him. He may have been a duplicitous jackass, but he had been a good hunter, and he'd stepped up at Mardi Gras when the MCB had lost all their senior leadership. I just nodded at Franks and wondered why these two were back in town.
"Good afternoon."
"We need to ask you some questions, Gardenier," Myers said. "You're coming with us. I won't be interrogated without the presence of counsel. You don't have the right to counsel in supernatural investigations."
"I do if such counsel is read in on the supernatural," I said,
as calmly as I could. And in this town, throw a rock and you find a lawyer who knows about the supernatural. Franks, Myers said, bring him. Now, Franks just did not care. He would drag me by the hair if he felt like it.
What's this about? Franklin asked.
Half the team was up and ready to pounce. The new guys didn't know Franks. Bad move. Franks would fight the whole office and probably enjoy it. Down, boys. I'm going peacefully. You want to cuff me? I turned around and put my hands behind my back. I'll be fine, guys. Let it go.
Hell I will, Sam growled.
None of your concern, Haven, Myers said. Just stay out of this.
Last time I heard those same exact words out of an MCB agent's cock holster, you cowards massacred a cruise ship full of civilians.
Get the hell out of our way if you know what's good for you. Franks, cuff him. Call Mr. Lambert, will you, Franklin? I asked as Franks put on the cuffs. I won't say Franks and I were friends, but we had fought side by side. I think I even saved his life at Mardi Gras, but that did not matter with Franks. Those cuffs bit to the bone. I'm not sure he even knew how to put them on lightly.
You call anyone, the MCB will throw you in prison, Myers snapped on the way out.
I hope Franklin would call his bluff. They took me outside, and Franks put me in the back of the car with a shove. Myers dropped a bag over my head.
Is that strictly necessary?
I knew the sound was muffled, but it was a reasonable question. The answer was a hard blow on the side of my head. Okay. They were playing by those rules. This would be interesting. I probably should have been scared. The classic black helicopter boys were whisking me away to places unknown to interrogate me. I was probably going to be beaten up. There was a fair chance I'd get shot in the head. Also a fair chance I'd see the inside of a federal prison. I wasn't sure what they were pissed about. Could be any number of things, but I wasn't going to let it get to me. Prison would suck, but I really don't fear the one thing most people fear most. Death. It's not that I'm suicidal, but I long to die. I've been to heaven. It was a nice place. I'm looking forward to going back. Duty really is heavier than mountains, and death really is lighter than a feather for me. I was sent back for one unknown mission. One moment when I have to achieve perfection as a monster hunter. Then I die. At a guess, painfully. I don't know when that will be, but I'm okay with whenever it comes. I simply don't fear it. So all this was just another frustrating episode in a world full of frustration. I'd said I was an addict about monster hunting, but frankly, if it wasn't for the whole mission from God thing, I'd probably find some way to give it up. This sort of shit was just getting on my nerves. I was halfway tempted to try to get them to kill me. Franks wouldn't mind. Franks really did not have the emotional parts to mind. I had been expecting them to take me to some out-of-the-way spot to interrogate, but instead they took me straight to the Franklin Federal Building at Lafayette Square. I could tell even through the bag over my head. Church Street to Girard and into the underground parking lot. I recognized the bumps on Church, which seriously needed resurfacing. God knows I'd been there enough meeting with MCB back in the good old days when Castro was in charge. I missed him. When the car stopped, I was as helpful getting out as I could be. It didn't matter. Franks just manhandled me out of the car, and nobody can manhandle someone like Franks. Then it was more or less being carried by one arm through a series of corridors. Elevator down, one, two, three levels, the MCB interrogation and holding area. Turn left, turn right, one, two, three, 10 paces, interrogation room 4. hard steel seat. If the bag was off, the room would be a light salmon. Facing one of the de rigueur reflecting windows, table bolted to the ground, two chairs, both steel, not so heavy as to be a useful weapon. And sure enough, the hood came off. Given my current relationship with the committee, you'd better have some serious probable cause for this, Duane. Only Myers and Franks had been joined by Special Agent Campbell. Of course, Myers was still a junior agent. Grabbing a hunter off the street was over his pay grade.
Nice try. This has been cleared, Campbell said, sitting down across from me. I know you're involved with the Dark Masters, and I know you killed your brother just to shut him up so he couldn't implicate you in the ring. I requested assistance to clear this up once and for all, so Washington dispatched Agent Franks. And believe me, when Agent Franks assists in an interrogation, the truth always comes out. And now, you're going to answer some questions.
Gardenier Oliver, I said. 156-25-7819. Monster Hunter. That's the way it's going to be? Myers asked. Absent counsel, yes.
You know you don't get counsel here, Campbell said. We're the only ones who know where you are.
We're in the federal building. MCB Detention and Interrogation. Room 4.
Nice guess. Where's the rest of the cells?
10 paces that way. I gestured with my chin. Turn left. 5 paces. 3 cells on the right. 2 on the left.
You know what I mean.
Campbell nodded at Franks. I've been hit quite a few times. I'd been shot a couple more. Getting hit by Franks was more like being shot. I ended up on the floor shaking my head. I'd lost at least one tooth. And I can safely say he'd pulled his punch.
That was an honest answer. You asked where the cells were. They're around the fucking corner.
He's correct,
Frank stated helpfully.
The Dark Master's cells, Campbell snarled. Where are the rest of the Dark Master's cells, Gardenier?
I have no clue. I'm not part of the ring and never have been.
Really, Chad? Myers said.
We get the reading that you're involved. You go snooping about it around the world. Then you conveniently find your brother's cell and take out the only lead we had. Nice way to tie up loose ends.
Just stopping the kidnappings is not going to save you from prison.
That was months ago.
Government may move like a glacier, Campbell said, but whatever ends up in front of a glacier is crushed eventually. Because of your relationship with some committee members, the director was hesitant to take extreme measures. But now your time has come.
That wasn't my fault. I'm innocent. I was never part of the ring.
But you're never going to believe that, are you?
So now we're definitely on the only in the presence of counsel thing. Time to break out the pliers, Franks.
Won't need them,
he said simply. It's good to be in the hands of a pro... And then Franks hit me again. It took a long time, and it wasn't pleasant. Since you're reading this, I didn't die, and I'm not writing these memoirs from prison. I did end up in the hospital, however. The chart was fairly extensive. Dislocated shoulder, broken left wrist, broken right forearm, contusions over 80% of my torso, 2 broken ribs, internal bleeding, skull fractures, broken right occiput, broken nose, 4 missing teeth, 6 broken fingers, 7 fingernails ripped off. It was more painful than it sounds. The problem with interrogating someone under the assumption that they know something they don't is that they cannot tell you what you want to hear. Campbell, who hated me anyway, was convinced I knew about more cells. If I even hinted I agreed, I was going to a secret prison forever. There would be no trial or anything like that. It would simply happen. Later, I found out that Campbell had been really close with Agent Robinson, mentor and protege, and he blamed me personally for Robinson getting eaten by the mama. There hadn't been any more Dark Masters kidnappings after Thornton's death, so the MCB director had been ready to believe my testimony before the committee. At least until Campbell used Robinson's death to sell the story that I was still a menace, hence his insistence of bringing in Franks for a special interrogation. I didn't crack. After the beating started, I didn't even wisecrack, believe it or not. I just took it and kept reciting my name and social. Oh, and I didn't hesitate to scream. A lot. I don't know when they actually stopped. I was drifting in and out. Something about a subdural cerebral hematoma. Give Franks his due. He knew how to not quite kill someone. I do remember it was actually Franks who called it. All we want is the truth. Truth, I muttered through busted lips. I'd spend most of the time on the floor and was starting to like it there. Truth. Gardenier. Oliver. Franks. Myers sounded tired and unhappy. As the unfortunate bastard picked to be Frank's partner, he'd been sent all the way from Washington for this, and he'd come to the realization that I was telling the truth.
He knows nothing,
Franks finally declared.
I'll be the judge of that, Campbell replied. But I think we'll give Gardenier some time to contemplate.
I'm bored,
Franks said.
We're done.
I passed out. Wasn't the first time, but this time, they didn't wake me up again. The rest of it was hazy. I'd been in the marine bombing in Beirut, and it was like that. Light and dark. Voices. Too extensive to treat here. Muttered something. Sharp. Probably have thought of that before you beat someone to death. Good. I was going to die. Sorry, God. Tried to do the right thing. I didn't die. I wanted to die. Especially when I woke up in the hospital room with Frank staring at me. I could only open one eye. I just looked at him. He looked back. I'm not sure what Franks is. I'm pretty certain he's not entirely human. He has none of the emotions of charity or mercy or conscience that makes us human, and I've seen him take a fatal head wound and just keep fighting like it was nothing. But what he does have is an absolute sense of duty. He wouldn't be upset killing a building full of orphans if there was a real need to do so. Say they were all vampires or had been bitten by a loop guru or zombies or pick a reason to wipe out a nest of orphans. He'd shoot every little tot in the head, wring their necks like chickens, whatever, and go have dinner. Wouldn't bother him. But he knew, and I knew, that this mission had been flawed from the outset. He was sure now that I had nothing to do with the Dark Masters. He knew that Campbell had acted unprofessionally, emotionally, so wound up in his anger that he lost all objectivity, and that he, Franks, had wasted his valuable time beating me half to death for no good reason. So I just looked at him, and he looked back. I wouldn't say it was a staring contest, but I actually passed back out after a while. So I guess he won. Mr. Gardenier, a voice said. This time there was no Franks. There was a Myers. Gardenier Oliver, I said. I tried to remember my social and couldn't. Damn, I'd been hit hard. Mr. Gardenier, the voice said again. I'm Samuel Colts, your legal counsel. I turned my head, wincing in pain. There was another person in the room. Short, spare, very nice suit.
Not MCB. Not with that suit. That was a $3,000 suit. Nice tie. Myers was really there, and just as clearly unhappy, which suited me fine. Ugly suit.
Lambert? I asked.
Yes, Colt said.
Mr. Lambert sent me to represent you in this matter.
Albert Aristide Lambert was the senior named partner of Lambert, Klein, Masson, and Kempf, one of New Orleans' most prestigious law firms. The Lamberts were old, old money and power. My gentleman, Remy, had worked for them previously, and I'd retained them shortly after joining Hoodoo Squad. There were always minor legal matters to clear up with monster hunting, and most of Lambert, Klein, Masson, and Kempf's better attorneys were read in on Hoodoo. In New Orleans, they had to be. Colts was a new one, though. Him I didn't know. No questions till I'm fully recovered, I muttered.
That is not going to fly, Myers said.
Agent Myers, Colts said, smiling thinly.
I am aware of the broad brief given to Monster Control Bureau as well as the rationale thereof, and I also have a read-in federal judge who thinks your bureau should be shut down. You may feel free to continue to dig the very deep hole you are currently in, or you can accept that no questions will be presented to my client until such time as he has recovered by my definition, and I have had time to fully counsel him on this matter. As you were just informed by federal injunction. Is there some part of injunction you don't understand, Agent? Or should I write it down in very small words for you?
It took 6 weeks for me to recover to a physical condition where I could do much. It took a week for me to get discharged, go home, and have a long, coherent conversation with my attorney. It took 3 weeks for Lambert, Klein, Masson, and Kempf to open up a can of whoop-ass on the MCB like they'd rarely known. Despite what Special Agent Campbell thought, despite what Agent Myers thought, it turned out it was possible to sue the ever-living crap out of the MCB, and all of them, personally. Mr. Lambert was puzzled that I did not want to include Franks. My rationale was that Frank's was essentially a non-self-directing weapon. It would be like suing my Uzi. The judge did require Frank's to give a top-secret deposition to my attorneys at one point. I was pretty sure Frank's wouldn't kill them. He was used to asking questions, not being forced to answer them. I wasn't present, but it was recorded, and I watched the tape several times, with the sound off, just to watch his expression. And yes, Franks does have facial expressions. They range from slightly annoyed to very annoyed. It was a basic necessity that there were a few federal judges read in on the supernatural. I had no idea what most of their cases involved. Many of these judges, while recognizing the importance of the first reason, were also fairly uncomfortable with the MCB's often draconian actions. Torturing a suspect and justifying it by a reading crossed several lines. MCB was basically just another government agency, which meant they could get in trouble for breaking the law same as everybody else. It was just that they were so shrouded in mystery and lies that it seldom happened. Normally, suits against the MCB were tossed for national security reasons. But this time, they wound up with an angry judge. About the time my lawyers opened up the can of whoop-ass, MCB tried to retaliate. They turned up all sorts of nasty stuff about the law firm, the Lamberts, my attorney. The fact that Mr. Lambert had a mistress was trotted out to Mrs. Lambert, who apparently replied that of course he had a mistress, so did she. Mr. Colts turned out to be gay. This is New Orleans. Your point? They tried bribery, but the lawsuit was pure gold from the law firm's end, so that just led to another federal suit. What MCB mostly learned was that trying to corrupt a New Orleans legal firm was like trying to fight a rainstorm with a fire hose. Had Agent Castro still been alive, he could have told them that. Because of the secretive nature of their job, the MCB wasn't used to being sued, and screwed up every step of the way. Accountability was an indecipherable mystery to them. The Lamberts could smell a very juicy suit. It was like panning for gold in a virgin stream. Every overturned rock was pure litigation gold. Here's how we calculated damages. I was earning huge puff fighting monsters. MCB had beaten me practically to death, was trying to get me canned as an MHI employee, and was generally interfering in my ability to earn income. And, oh yeah, violated the shit out of my rights. I couldn't get them arrested for that, but I could make them pay through the nose. How much was I out? Not just for the 6 weeks of recuperation. Their harassment was liable to cost me my income in perpetuity. I should last until I'm 80 with any normal job. Figure out how much the lost income was over that time. Then, multiply that times some number, maybe 5, for pain and emotional suffering. $100 million was less than the total, but it was a nice round number. And I don't care how big your secret black ops budget is, that's real money. Then there were legal fees, which were legally permissible to be tripled. Good lawyers cost a lot of money. As long as the suit was ongoing, by order of our judge, I could not be deposed, questioned, or otherwise contacted or harassed by Monster Control Bureau regarding pretty much anything. Oh, and MCB had, naturally, had all my permits revoked, which led to another lawsuit thrown on the pile. Unfortunately, that made it impossible to do my job. The suit could potentially take years, absent MCB offering a settlement I would accept, and MCB had no clue how to negotiate a settlement. Their invariable MO was to demonize, vilify, destroy. Negotiate was not in that list. The Shackelfords loved that I was causing the government discomfort, but my presence was making life complicated for them. I couldn't work, so I took a leave of absence. I packed up and went to England to attend Oxford. And, yes, it took a year before the MCB settled. An interesting year, and fruitful in many ways. But I still missed hunting. Chapter 13. Before I talk about my time in England, I'll finish my story about the lawsuit. While I was away, it got so bad the judge overseeing the suit threatened to pass an injunction against any action by MCB, shut them down entirely until they could be thoroughly vetted. Now that did get into national security issues, and I'm sure somebody at MCB started contemplating the pros and cons of murdering federal judges. Luckily, someone at Department of Justice got the MCB to see reason and settle. That was shortly after Franks was deposed and, being Franks, answered all the questions posed to him frankly. Lots of silences, lots of muttered,
"Classified,"
until it was explained in very small words that in this deposition, there was no such thing. Then he talked. Frankly. And the judge hit the roof, and DOJ very quietly went into panic mode. "We are not going to pay Mr. Gardenier $100 million. The attorney representing MCB was not from MCB. They didn't have anyone trained to negotiate a settlement involving violation of constitutional rights. Chris Welch was a standard DOJ attorney who was read in, the sort that usually handled excessive force and violation of constitutional rights suits.
I had just flown back to the U.S. and was in a D.C. conference room, sitting across from Myers, who was looking furious. Good. Beat me half to death, will you? I'll beat you to death with lawyers. Everybody knows that's worse. Even though Campbell had been the senior agent calling the shots, and the only reason Myers had been there at all was because he was Frank's current gopher, secretary, and caddy, they had left the junior agent to answer for the MCB during our negotiation. The exact number from our calculations is 100,156,428 dollars, Colt said. It was me and my attorney on one side of the table, Myers and his on the other. That would cover his loss of income from monster hunting, as well as pain and emotional suffering penalties, and deprivation of rights penalties based upon projected income, as well as his extensive medical bills from the torture. Which is clearly out of the question, Welch said. Just off the top, the wage calculation is based upon an 85-year lifespan and retirement at 65. Actuarially, Mr. Gardenier's maximum lifespan is closer to 45. The pain and emotional suffering penalties are based upon avoiding monster hunting, which is, in and of itself, filled with pain and emotional suffering. Got me there, I thought. The pain and emotional suffering in this case is based upon deliberate torture by members of federal law enforcement in violation of his Fifth Amendment rights, Colt said evenly. As duly attested and sworn by Agent Franks, no first name, no middle initial, but who did give a very accurate, indeed, blow-by-blow testimony as to the nature of his actions at the behest of Special Agent Campbell, who was in turn directed to do so by the Director of the Monster Control Bureau, Director Harold Wagner. The fact that no one even tried to lie about any of the things that were done sort of says it all. Don't you think? I object to the repeated use of the term torture, Welch replied. Hostile interrogation is the correct term. Torture, the action or practice of inflicting severe pain on someone as a punishment or to force them to do or say something. Colts recited the dictionary definition. In the case of my client, it is reasonable to describe the actions of your agents as both.
You really don't get it, do you?
Myers was supposed to sit there quietly, but he was getting really angry.
We're trying to save lives. We protect the whole goddamn world.
What is there to protect, Agent, if this is what you consider perfectly acceptable?
You think this is bad? Myers snarled. Do you have any clue what would happen with a breakthrough of the Great Old Ones? Or the Fae get back in control?
I've heard those arguments repeatedly, Agent. Would you like to explain the part where protecting the world from those issues required my client to be taken to a dim basement and beaten to the point he required extensive surgery? Please, Agent, inform all of us what exactly you were going to find out from my client that would prevent a breakthrough of the Great Old Ones. Prevent the final battle. That would permit you to absolutely ensure that the Fae, who lost power to humans in prehistory, will not resume hunting us as animals. Please, Agent, present your logic. I would personally love to hear it. I held up a hand. Duane, Frank said it. You heard it. I told you I had no involvement in the Dark Master's operation. If I had, I would have told you because, well, I was really tired of being beaten. You weren't listening. On a not exactly digressing note, if you're torturing someone for information, not listening is probably the stupidest thing you could possibly do. Campbell got frustrated at being in charge of out-of-control New Orleans and losing a friend and took it out on me. That's all that happened, Duane. You all serially got frustrated and angry at stuff I had nothing to do with and found someone to hurt. And you can blame me, you can blame God, you can blame your boss. But mostly, Duane, you can blame yourself. You can blame normal human emotions and too much power and too much frustration. The reason I didn't include Franks in this was that he only does what he's told. He doesn't let his emotions cloud his judgment.